everyone, this is Andrew Doyle, writer, comedian and columnist for Spiked. This is the very first episode of Culture Wars, which is a new monthly podcast in which I chat to a special guest and try to navigate some of the world's insanity. My first guest was Bridget Fettersy. I've met Bridget on a number of occasions. She's a writer, she's a comedian, she hosts her own YouTube show Dumpster Fire and a podcast called Walk-ins Welcome. I was really, really thrilled that Bridget agreed to be my first guest. I really enjoyed chatting to her, and I think we covered quite a lot of ground in this one. She lives in LA, so obviously she's been caught right in the middle of the cultural revolution that's been kicking off, and so inevitably, that's where we started. Anyway, enough of the preamble. This is Culture Wars with Andrew Doyle and the wonderful Bridget Fettersy. Hi, Bridget. How are you?
I'm personally great. I feel like that meme.
Which one?
The dog sitting amongst the fire, drinking coffee.
But I mean, you're right in the middle of where the problems have been. You know, I mean, the culture war has exploded in a way that, I mean, we've been warning about this kind of thing for a long time.
Forever. Maybe that's why I feel so kind of nonchalant about it.
Really?
Maybe just because we have the gift of being in it and being and warning people that. While everyone around me is kind of freaking out and going, what's happening? I'm like, we've been like, there were multiple canaries in the coal mine, not just one.
Absolutely. Do you feel, I mean, you know, I'm really having to bite my tongue to avoid saying I told you so, you know, because it's not a good look, is it, to gloat?
Yeah.
Particularly when things are going so badly.
I don't feel the inclination to say that because I can understand why so many people would feel bamboozled right now because so much of it was ushered in under the guise of progress. So they
are
mostly, I feel like it's good people who have been swindled.
I think that's right. I think a lot of people don't know where the origins are, you know, and where it comes from. Well, maybe a good way to sort of start is to chat about, because I think you and I have, in a way, had a kind of a comparable journey, at least, insofar as, you know, we both come from a stand-up comedy background, and we're suddenly migrating into politics and culture and all that kind of thing. You're now writing for The Spectator regularly. Mm-hmm. So do you want to tell me how that transition happened? Because you were, like, full-time stand-up, weren't you?
I was full-time stand-up and writing, but about sex and relationships. You know, just I was the Playboy advisor for a while, and I had a weekly column at Playboy, and I was writing about, but that's really when I became exposed to the culture war in a way that I think the reason I have so much understanding for people who are kind of just stumbling into this and waking up and going, what is happening, is that that was me. You know, I was very much in 2015, like, wait, what? You can't say what? And why can't I say it? And it's not just like you can't say, oh, just be a real man or something like that. You'll get canceled for it. And what is this idea of being canceled? So all of these concepts that we are overly familiar with from just them exploding, like you said, into the mainstream, I was trying to get my mind around five or 6 years ago. And then that was really the strangest. And that's kind of, you know, the book I'm writing right now is called The Accidental Pundit. And it's essentially about this journey of how I open the book and I say, I never wanted any of this.
That's what I mean, is that you and I kind of ended up being drawn into it as opposed to seeking it out.
No, you know? I would be much more comfortable with my role if I had wanted it, if I had gone to school and I had learned how to speak on camera and do media hits. I didn't even know that a media hit was called a media hit until like last year.
You know,
I didn't know any of the journalism terminology. I didn't, even when I was stumbling into column writing, I very much was, because I just always wanted to be a writer and tell jokes. So I never focused on learning all of the terminology around any specialized profession other than maybe comedy I don't know. It just was, I didn't also realize that then there was this entire kind of woke progressive or whatever ideology that was permeating particularly the fields of activism and journalism. And I didn't know any of those words either. I mean, I remember I had a woman who I went to when I was up on a farm, and I kept calling her like my queer Siri, because I'm like, what what are all these words? What does this mean? She's like, you need to educate yourself. And that was the first time I heard that. And I was like, well, you're telling me that I can't understand something because it's only your lived experience. And then you're telling me that I need to go educate myself, but only you understand it because it's your experience. So how can I educate myself?
So you're making the mistake there of assuming coherence in their point of view. But that phrase is, that's one of their big phrases, is educate yourself. And I do find that a lot of the people that use that phrase tend to be quite resistant to education. They don't know much about history, and they don't want to read other points of view, you know. So it's kind of ironic. But I think you're right, like that sort of time when you were writing for Playboy, so sort of 2015 time, that feels like when it really started accelerating, you know, and turning
well,
into
because
something
of Trump.
Because of Trump. Right,
it was Trump. He was basically the accelerant, I think. That's why I say, I'm like, he's going to win. They need him. They need him. Because
did you predict it?
Oh, I knew he was going to win.
Really?
After seeing what was going on in 2015 and seeing the way that just from the emails I was getting, I was like, people aren't being honest because they don't feel like they can be honest, because if they're honest, they're either called transphobic or racist or sexist. And
right.
So they're not going to say anything. They're just going to go and vote. And so I had warned everybody. I lost friends for even suggesting that he was going to win, which was also when I realized that there was this mentality taking hold. And this is what I really failed to comprehend and understand. And I still think that I underestimate. You know, I feel like we keep saying, like, it's a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope. But just today, it broke this morning that, you know, Reddit banned all of these subreddits, one of them being gender critical, and these kind of famous subreddits. That's a feminist subreddit. You know,
right.
Years ago, that would have been actual progress. And now it's considered hate speech because they're critical of some of the science and the rhetoric around the trans movement. And
yeah.
So it's, you know, we were just joking about J.K. Rowling. So I'm a little bit shocked at how fast it's accelerating.
Yeah, I think there's a few things I want to sort of talk about in relation to what you've just said. So just one thing at a time. I think firstly, Trump, did you, as you know, obviously as someone who would know a lot more about American politics than I do, do you think it's fair to say that the election of Trump was a reaction to these kinds of things? Or do you think he was the thing that caused these kinds? Is it, you know, this chicken and egg thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what came first? How did that work?
I think he's such an amalgamation of so many things. And honestly, there were multiple moments when I knew he was going to win. And one in particular was when I was scrolling down CNN's Twitter feed, and every 5 images was one of Hillary Clinton, but all the rest were Trump.
Right.
And I was thinking, just from, like, say I couldn't read.
Yeah.
You know, and say I didn't just from a visual perspective, this guy is getting more attention.
Yes.
And we live, and, you know, I've read that book, Amusing Ourselves to Death. I've read this other book, Mediated, all about how everything has become mediated in our culture,
mm-hmm.
and including politics, and it's all become entertainment. And just from that perspective alone, just taking aside politics, culture war, reaction,
yeah.
very simply capitalism, entertainment, and just American stupidity.
Right.
I would say that I thought he was going to win because he was more entertaining. And there was so much hatred for Hillary. I
yes.
just don't think you can. That's why this election, this forthcoming election, is more interesting to me, because she was so, people hated her more than they hated Trump.
I see. Okay. And that's the thing, isn't it? I think she was a divisive figure, even if you were from the left or even on the amongst
no
Democrats.
Matter who they had that. And what's so funny too about this forthcoming election is that I feel either side could actually win handily based
yeah.
on the other side's behavior, and they cannot help but out crazy one another continuously.
Right. So this is an interesting test case of how much things have, like you said, things have gone mad very, very
yeah.
quickly. All of those things you were talking about back in 2015, 2016, they seemed crazy enough at the time, but the stuff that's happened over the last few weeks, I mean, it's just
weeks.
It is just weeks, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's why it's so mind-boggling. And I don't think we can underestimate or overestimate
right
how different things could look even just by November.
Right. So how has that happened? I mean, this is what I don't understand. How did it happen so quickly? Why this sudden explosion of this stuff, do you think?
I think what happened is most of this, honestly, more people were exposed to it probably than ever before because more people spent time online than ever before.
Because
of the lockdown. So the lockdown forced everybody online. It also forced a lot of intergenerational cohabitating in America in ways that might not necessarily have been happening. So you had a lot of college kids who were home from school for months when they would have been at college. And you had just more exposure to these ideas that were pretty fringe, like even still they're fringe and they're even more mainstream than they were. But I was just joking on Twitter. I'm like, I want to do a documentary where I drive around America and just ask everyone I come in contact with if men can get their period.
Right.
Like that's it. Yeah. That's the only question I'm going to ask. That's just the one question.
See, I think we know what most people would say to that. And yet the impression you get on Twitter is that that's a sort of contentious issue. Weird, it
is. And so I think that then you had the lockdowns, then we had this horrific, you know, killing of George Floyd, that then again, everyone was online. Everybody was locked up. Everybody saw this. Everyone was rightfully outraged. And this isn't the first time this has happened in America either, where we've had this outrage and then outpouring of people onto the streets. But now you also have a pent up population.
Right.
And everybody just, I think, with that explosion of protests, then it just, so many things went mainstream. You know, that woke culture that, it's weird. It seemed like it was, you know, people were so, I was like, you guys are idiots. People kept saying, you know, like, did COVID kill the culture wars? I'm like, no. The culture wars are so much stronger in America than COVID, it seemed to me, clearly. And even now I watch the disdain with which the media treats people who want to go see their parents or can't see them or want to get back to work. And the applause they give all the protesters. And it's just, it's like they create so much of this division and the culture war. And it's, and never before has politics been so, like, there's a lot of people making money off this division. Sure. And off of these fights.
I saw you tweet about earlier in the month about, oh, everyone was saying that COVID was going to kill the culture war. Actually, the culture war killed COVID. And because that's pretty much what happened, isn't it? And let's face it, most of this is not about George Floyd now. You see, like, if it was just the case that there were protests about police brutality, I would support that. If it was just protests against racism, great. But that's not what this is now. This is absolutely not that. It's so distanced from that now.
Well, because then you see it in these like chat, it's really then becomes like anti-capitalism, anti-Western civilization, and I was saying this on Dumpster Fire today, my YouTube show. I was like, I understand some of these statues were used as propaganda during Jim Crow. Like that, I understand some of them probably need to come down. They're not representative of history. They are people trying to remind people that they will still be, you know, less than or under the boot of. And I still think that we should go through the process, because in that process, we get to have these conversations that I feel are healing and that I feel are important to our racial tension and our historical treatment of the Black population. All of these things, we can have that conversation if you go through the process of, you know, submitting a petition to town hall to take down the statue. And I also empathize with the rage and the frustration and just saying, well, that hasn't worked and so we're tearing it down. But when that happens, you lose that opportunity.
You do.
To have the discourse.
And I also feel, I mean, I saw a video the other day, which I found pretty disturbing. So there was a Black protester outside the Emancipation Monument.
Yeah, saying, we covered
saying, you know, this is, this, this monument was built with the money by freed slaves. One of them was my great-great-grandfather or whatever he was. And it was a relative, an ancestor. And he was saying that this was disrespectful to him and to the freed slaves that had put up this statue of Abraham Lincoln, who after all did, you know, should get a bit of a break for the whole abolition thing. But there isn't that conversation. He was just being shouted down, almost as though he's got the, you know, he can't be a black man with this opinion.
No.
You know, and that strikes me as intolerant more than anything.
I can't stand grouping people and speaking on their behalf.
Yeah.
Which is what I find actually more dangerous, but also just offensive. So you're going, even with the Aunt Jemima thing, I'm like, so you're going to group every black person together and say that they're against this when there are people who, Terrence Williams is hilarious. He was making a video. He's like, I don't think this tastes like racism. And he was joking about how he grew up with Aunt Jemima and he didn't, you know, this is a black man who has an opinion, but his opinion gets erased by a bunch of, you know, predominantly white people. That was the other thing that was crazy, is they just released all of the very creepily gathered information about the protesters, which is a completely other conversation we're not having that we should be having.
Right.
Why the fuck are all of these, like,
well, they're being monitored and sort of,
they're like, oh, we got this, we gathered information from, you know, everyone's cell phones, basically. And it's demographics that they're gathering on the protesters based on the cell phones. And there are these companies that are gathering this information. I'm like, what? We need to be talking about that. Yeah. Which ones were there at night? Which ones were there during the day? Anyway, separate topic that's being ignored entirely.
Yeah.
And they were talking. And in LA, it was only 2% of black people who were protesting.
Yeah, I can believe
according
that.
According to these, you know, models that they have.
I mean, I've seen videos of white protesters shouting at black cops, you know, and sort of saying they're
part
of the problem.
That's crazily low, though. 2%? That's insanely low. And this, I think that was at night, and it was 3% during the day.
Sure.
I mean, that, and it's funny because I had a guy on my podcast, Coach T, and he was like, no heterosexual black men are out there protesting. And I was kind of like, that's a broad generalization. And then I was looking at those numbers. I'm like, Coach T might have been right.
You know, that thing about the sort of white liberals sort of defending or speaking on behalf of black people, how can they not see, you know, how actually offensive that is? You know,
it's the same thing with comedy.
Yeah.
I would be offended if I was in some group that was so pathetic and pitiful and protected that nobody could make fun of me. That would be more offensive to me. And perhaps that's because I'm a comedian, but where I come from, like, true equality is being able to make fun of everyone and everything. And if you want to be part of, you know, like, that's, everyone should be getting roasted.
Yeah.
You know, no one is above or below getting roasted, whichever way you want to look at it. It just seems offensive to me that some people are like, oh, you can't touch, they're untouchable. You can't make any joke about them.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way. I hate this idea of people deciding that, you know, an act can't talk about gay men because it might upset the gay men in the audience. Like, well, I'll make my own mind up if I'm upset by
it
that.
It takes,
you know,
away agency from people.
It's mad.
And also it removes the ability for people to have to deal with their own emotions. So if you are upset by that and offended, then you have to go deal with that or say something or whatever. But we can't create a world where no one's ever offended. That's ridiculous.
It's strange as well, because everyone who is an expert in this area of trauma, there's a real consensus that actually the worst thing you can do when it comes to traumatic events is to never talk about them or ever hear any reference to them or shield yourself. It's actually the least productive thing for you as an individual. So
they've also done a lot of studies that are coming out that trigger warnings are actually more traumatic than talking about the trauma, than being confronted with the trauma itself.
Yeah.
They cause more anxiety and distress than, you know, reading about rape, than warning somebody that they might see a rape. Like, for someone like me who's been raped, it's more distressing to read a trigger warning, because then I start, you know, it's the unknown.
Yeah.
You're like, well, what is it going to be?
Or is there like then an expectation that you should feel traumatized, and that might in of itself trigger the trauma, you know?
Right. It's so weird. It's, And all of the language stuff is very disconcerting to me. And I'm rereading 1984, and it really is kind of terrifying. I mean, more than terrifying, because you can't keep, you know, I am like, how long before I'm getting arrested for saying something in my house that's not allowed by the approved messages, I've always kind of called it.
And some of the passages, you remember the passage about the statues falling and the name, yeah, the street names being changed, but it is... You know, it's become a bit of a cliche, hasn't it, to say things are Orwellian, but it's so true. If you read that book, it's all there.
Yeah, all there. I don't know how he knew, but I guess because if you pay any attention to history at all, this has already happened before.
Yeah, this is why this has got the seeds of authoritarianism. Like, you can spot it. This is how authoritarianism begins, you know. But this one is a particularly inconsistent, incoherent one. I mean, you were talking about anti-capitalism, and there's a real anti-capitalist agenda, but a lot of this is being pushed by massive corporations, McDonald's and Adidas and all that, you know, big Adidas, who have had a history of child labor, by the way. But let's just see, these aren't the best people to be pontificating about morals and about what's right and wrong.
McDonald's, you know, who's probably single-handedly responsible for the obesity epidemic in America, or at least the seeds of it, you know. Yeah. Why don't we address that? It's a strange thing to see. You know, I always joke about capitalism always winning. And in some ways, I guess in the past couple of days, you've seen like all these advertisers aren't posting on social media anymore. They're taking I'm like, good, A. We don't want your ads on here, around here. But what that leaves even more is that then these things do kind of become like public works, you know, it ends up becoming a utility, because how are they going to pay for themselves if they can't rely on capitalism and ad dollars? But it's interesting, the pressure that, I mean, and so that's always been creepy too. That's just the creepy, that was the creepiest thing about Patreon, when they booted Sargon. Just for saying something on a YouTube channel that wasn't even his channel, and it wasn't even on Patreon, and it was mostly because MasterCard came and said, we'll stop accepting payment. I mean, that shit should terrify everyone.
Well,
but
yeah, I mean,
for some reason, people think it's not going to come to their door.
That is, and they should think it is, because, I mean, when that happened with Sargon, that was, at the time, it felt like quite an extraordinary thing, actually. Whereas now, if that happened today, you'd be like, well, that's run of the mill. That's happening all the time now, you know. And this idea that it doesn't come to you, that your worldview, your opinions will be safe.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get older. There's going to be another younger crop. I was just thinking about this, that they're going to come up with their own rules, and you're going to be sacrificed on the altar of that you built.
Yeah,
basically,
sure.
All of these people who are, you know, roasting people over the digital flame and cancel culture, that it will come for them eventually. They usually have the biggest skeletons in their closet too.
Well, I mean, who doesn't though? You know, everyone's got something, you know. And I think for me though, the red line is the Golden Girls. They're going after the Golden Girls now. That can't happen. You know, I can't be dealing with that.
How can you even take that serious? As somebody who's a comedian, I vacillate between being terrified and not being able to take any of it seriously at all.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's the worry, isn't it? My instinct is to laugh as well. Or, I mean, a lot of people say just ignore it, but it won't go away if you just laugh at it or ignore it. It'll win. That's what's going to happen.
And it's strange, because it would be easy if there was somewhere like a safe harbor to kind of find myself ideologically. But what am I going to go root for Trump? Because he just lies constantly too.
Right.
And that administration is constantly lying and blatantly lying. And so I look around, and I've been saying this for years. I'm like, authoritarianism is creeping on all sides, all sides.
You're listening to Culture Wars with Andrew Doyle. If you're enjoying the podcast, please make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can subscribe to the podcast on all the major apps, including iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. And if your provider allows you to, then why not give Culture Wars a rating and a review while you're there? It would really help other listeners to find us. Now, back to the show. So where does that leave you? Because, I mean, you wrote a really good article for The Spectator about... Yeah, fuck.
Fuck. Yeah,
that article you wrote about being politically homeless and about how moderate voices, you know, people aren't confident enough to say something moderate because it gets them in trouble.
Right.
If in the next election, if Biden is fully embracing this sort of woke culture, and so you think, well, you're going to have to vote another way, but then there's Trump. I mean, so which way do you go? What do you do?
I don't even know if I want to stay in America, but I now, because of this stupid pandemic, I can't even leave America. I'm exactly. A prisoner here because we've handled it so badly. We're not going to be welcome anywhere in the world. And then that's gaslighting, because the first wave I would blame the administration for. The second wave I would blame the local governments, particularly Democratic, for allowing all of these thousands of people into the streets, which is, yeah. Again, it's another weird, you know, I have such mixed feelings because I understand, I support the protesters, and I understand that people want to feel like their life has meaning and they want to support something that is important, but take responsibility for the consequences of that. So fine, go protest. But now to sit back and say, oh no, see, there was this bullshit study that a bunch of liberal activist scientists did that said none of the protests cause any of these upticks and outbreaks that miraculously is happening 2 weeks after we saw images of thousands and thousands of people in the streets is actually Trump's fault. Like, you want to fucking see people go crazy? You're seeing it. You're actually seeing it. You're seeing people in having meltdowns everywhere because there is such a huge level of gaslighting going on from now the left that, you know, and then you hear Trump and he's like, well, if we don't do any tests, we can't possibly, you know, then the numbers won't go up if we don't do as many tests. You're like, how is that even... How can I even take this any of us seriously? But I'm worried. You know, my whole entire like dumpster fire this week was me just being like ranting because I'm like, you need to take responsibility. Be like, we're going to protest. We believe that this is more important, and we also understand that there might be spikes in COVID because we did this. Oh no. Fucking God forbid that happened. Now it's like, oh, it's all the Republicans who wanted to celebrate Memorial Day and get their haircuts.
I love this idea that the coronavirus will take a few days off to support the protesters. You
yeah.
know, it's hilarious.
And they were all citing all that the crazy, crazy gaslighting. Like, this is the level of gaslighting. The same people who were citing the protests that people went out in the streets for and the parades that everybody joined during the flu pandemic as evidence for why we needed to cancel everything and shut down, cancel all the everything, are now saying that their protests didn't spread anything. I'm like, you guys are, but it does make you feel like you're going crazy.
It does. And that's is that a lot of these people who say these things, they must know that most people don't believe it or don't accept it. But
I really think, and this was something that was very frustrating to me, is that the left had a lot of momentum. I thought it was really good. I thought that they had a lot of people on board, and then they just get like drunk with power and start canceling everyone and doing all these cockamamie things like starting Chaz and taking over portions of the city, and everybody's in a big dick swinging contest against Trump because they are all essentially clout chasing, which is weird to see our government leaders, like the governor of Seattle is in some pissing contest with the president just because he knows it elevates his profile to be like, oh, we're not going to listen to the president when he tells us not to let an autonomous zone pop. Like, you are a fucking moron. You guys, you are allowing anarchy and calling it progress and blaming it on Trump. It's all crazy. It's crazy. Americans aren't mentally resilient enough for this. This generation.
That word gaslighting is one of those words that the woke use all the time against people. But
I tell you what, projection.
Projection. That's exactly it. You know, and I mean, to what extent, like when you have Chaz and you have these sort of anarchic groups. And you think, but you know that if you defund the police, you know that if you get rid of the police, you know who's going to be worse affected?
Defund the police is something like, fucking my 20-year-old nephew says. And I'm like, okay, you're 20. That's who should be saying this. Okay. Right. If you're 19, 20, 21, 22, I'll even give you up to like 25 to be like, yeah defund the police and not really even know what that.
Once your frontal lobes are, 40 or a politician. Like, yeah, there's no excuse for this.
No.
But this is what I mean. It feels like it's an infantile kind of like culture, like just politically. It's just, it's like the children have grown up, but they haven't really grown up.
No.
You know?
You know, the mental health. Everybody was locked up. I've been joking about this. I'm like, you basically locked people up and the only place they could go was online to even have any kind of social communication. And that is where we all put our, we become abstractions. It's like I was saying the other day, I feel like it's that scene in Batman where the water gets poisoned and Scarecrow poisons the water and everybody starts like fighting they start hallucinating and fighting.
The hallucinations. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like their worst fears. And that's really the internet's like everyone's worst everyone's projecting. We're all projecting. And
well, I took a couple of days off Twitter and I tell you what, my mental health was so much better. I mean, didn't you take Lent?
I've taken Lent off. I feel, it's weird because with Dumpster Fire, and I joke about this all the time, like I started cooking meth in my garage. I took my meth habit and started cooking it because it's essentially my Twitter feed, you know, turned into a show. I just needed somewhere to put all that angst because I was having my Twitter account is obviously successful because for a reason. I'm obviously tapping into something that people enjoy or think is funny or relate to, but then it just dies. And so at least with Dumpster Fire, I get to express a lot of that stuff verbally and get it and expand upon it a little bit.
You said though that you're a Twitter addict. Is that
fair? Definitely. And I feel weird. That's what I mean is that I've like managed to monetize my addiction. So it's not, it's like I started getting high on my own supply and then I was like, I better start making my own supply instead of just stopping this.
Yeah.
But now I feel weirdly, we've started doing every other week because one of the three who Sammy Flaps and Folds, our third partner, she's been out of town and I'm thinking that maybe going forward, that actually might be the best way to kind of maintain it. Everybody wants it every day, which I can't do yet. And every week is good, but it's a lot. It takes us the whole weekend to produce, basically. Friday night writer's room, Saturday we shoot, Sunday, you know, they are editing, Sunday we do the final edit. It's just, it's a lot. So, and I have to be online.
Yeah. Is it, I know you say it's an addiction and I know you've said it's bad for you and everything, but do you feel also it's therapeutic in a way, like to get all this stuff out?
It's definitely therapeutic. I mean, I'll sit down and be like, I don't really feel up for this Dumpster Fire at all. And then the minute we start recording, I mean, I went on a rant yesterday that was, I don't even know where it came from, but I think it just came from me being on, it's like all that angst and pausing when agitated.
Yeah.
It doesn't just go away.
Sure. But, so, but I wouldn't know how you do it in a sense, because at the moment I'm finding it very hard to keep up with the constant things that are happening, you know, and the constant stories. It's, you know, I could be tweeting about this stuff all day and it would drive me insane.
Yeah, you can't keep up. That's the thing I've accepted. I'm like, I could just dip out completely and miss weeks and it's not going to matter. And by the way, no one's going to remember. So whatever I miss from the week that I take off, doesn't matter. Nobody else remembers it. They're already on to the last thing that happened. Sometimes things happen when we're doing writer's room and it's like, it'll happen on a Friday and it's already buried by Saturday by the time we go shoot.
Yeah. The one that's rolling and rolling though is the J.K. Rowling controversy. That is going on and on. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think because, you know, Abigail Schreier came on my podcast. She has the book out this week about the transgender craze kind of taking over teenage girls. And she made a really good point that I was kind of saying like, oh, I don't know. She's got fuck you money. She can do this. And she's like, yeah, but she doesn't need to. She could have just taken her money and shut up and enjoyed the, you know, all the accolades and everybody loving her and never said anything.
Yeah.
And she felt the need to speak out because she does feel that women are suffering and are being somewhat erased in this whole discussion. And she has taken it upon herself to do that when in fact she didn't really need to at all. And I think because she is so powerful, and interestingly enough, so many of the people who seem to hate her the most were like the Harry Potter fans, you know? Yeah. So it's like they grew up on Harry Potter. That was the only book they were all quoting online for years. And everyone, it was like a meme. It was a joke. Read another book.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think there's maybe a little bit of, you know, being disappointed by your hero if she's not living up to the woke standards.
But there's one thing I can't get my head around is the way in which she's been misrepresented. The way that they describe her as this utter monster, this sort of frothing at the mouth, hideous transphobe. And then you read the statement she put out, and it was compassionate, and it was measured, and it was balanced, and it was so clearly not coming from a place of hate.
No,
and yet she's had this torrent of abuse.
Oh yeah, and it's like I was watching all today. I was watching. It was all these like blue check white liberal men going after her and telling her to shut up and these horrible things. And that's the other weird thing about Twitter is that if, you know, Meghan Murphy got banned, why did she get banned exactly? I don't want to misunderstand it. She was banned from Twitter for
misgendering, wasn't it? I think.
Right. I think it was directly to a person. She misgendered someone. But I worry that if I even my joke about going around and asking if men can get their periods, I'm like, I'm probably going to get banned from Twitter just for that joke.
Maybe.
And I might. And that is terrifying. But I think that with the way that people will talk to me in my mentions, I'm like, you can say this to me. You can call me a cunt, a bitch. Like, I get the most horrifying things in my mentions. And if I said something like, can men get their periods, I'd get banned for hate speech. I'm like, have you seen my mentions?
Right.
My mentions are filled with hate speech.
Yeah, but they're abusing you in the name of love and compassion. That's
the thing. Yeah, but that's the weird thing is I'll see these very big accounts abusing J.K. Rowling, thinking A, it's okay because she's big, and B, it's somehow justified because it's they're fighting against a transphobic person. And yeah. I've been called a TERF and transphobic multiple times because I'm always joking about how the patriarchy is so crafty. It'll turn itself into a woman and then ask for rights that women don't even have.
I'm not surprised they go after you for that one.
No, because it's hilarious and true.
And they don't like funny things. So
no, that's so humorless. Everyone's so humorless too.
What does it do with comedy now then? I mean,
comedy's dead.
You think?
It's dead. What are we... Although I'm getting tweets, right? I'm getting text messages as we speak from everybody who's been watching my dumpster fire going, thank God you're still doing this because I laugh so hard. So
exactly.
I'm doing my best, but I said every week I have a segment called Breaking Bridget. And it's this week I was like, this show is breaking me doing this show because I actually want to check out, go off Twitter and go. We've been joking on my fetisy.com community, which is where I have like a community. It's been saving me. It's like a support group now at this point. It was a quarantine support group. Now it's just a world is on fire support group. And we've been joking that it's going to be my descent from like accidental pundit. Like the last chapter will be me becoming a food blogger because all I want to do is just like cook and talk about food. And the weird, I was thinking about being in the vet one day and they had the food channel on. And I said, why do you have the food channel on? Why not the animal channel? And they said that food is the only thing that isn't political anymore. Even though that's become political.
That's not true anymore.
No, I know. Alison Roman, it's all canceled. But they said that channel was the only one that people wouldn't fight over in the waiting room.
But this is it. Like all of this stuff, though, surely you've got all this material.
Yeah,
now,
I know.
You? Like if you want to do a stand-up tour or something, or a new stand-up show. Well, there's that. You can't go to it.
We can't do stand-up anymore. They took that away.
Hi. It's Fraser Myers here from Spiked. I produce Culture Wars along with all of Spiked's other podcasts. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I know it's early days, but if you think this might be a show that's worth supporting, then the best way to do that is to make a donation to Spiked. Even something as little as £5 per month is hugely appreciated and can make an enormous difference to our work. Your donations help us to keep going and growing so we can keep providing you with new, exciting and ambitious content. If you'd like to make a donation, it's really easy. All you need to do is go to spiked-online.com and hit the donate button in the top right corner. That's spiked-online.com and hit the donate button. Now, back to Culture Wars with Andrew Doyle.
Well, they're talking about doing socially distanced stand-up. I can't imagine that working. You know, when they're going to spread out the audience so that everyone's a million miles away from each other.
It's so creepy.
You don't get that contagion, that atmosphere of, you know, of laughter. I just find it weird.
It's all so weird. What are you going to do? I mean, where do you find yourself in all of this?
I think stand-up is sort of over, at least for the foreseeable future. I don't think socially distant stand-up gigs will work. I think more and more comedians, because a lot of them are doing stuff online, you know, just in their living room, just stand-up in their living room, which has a limited effect as far as I can see. I just don't think it works. It's not something I would do. I think it's going to be about writing. I'm just going to do more and more writing. That's the only way I can think of doing it.
And how are you holding up? I mean, I feel like the UK seems like a little bit out of control too.
It is. Well, I mean, I can't work out where. In some areas, I think we're worse than you. And in some areas, I think we're better. We've had a real purge recently of comedy shows, right? So like BBC iPlayer, all the streaming services, Netflix, taking off things like The Mighty Boosh and The League of Gentlemen and Little Britain, and shows where people in the past might have done blackface, for instance. And you've had that with the Golden Girls. But this is, you
what's
know, you
really
talk about-
funny is like, did any, was there a single show that didn't have black? Like, was that part of having a show? Why was there so much blackface in all these shows?
I mean, there's that.
Yeah.
And then, but then we heard this before a few years ago. Remember when Sarah Silverman did a sketch with blackface?
Yeah.
But of course, it was an anti-racist sketch. It was mocking racial attitudes.
Right.
But they flipped out. And that seemed silly at the time, and now everyone would accept it now. Like, everyone would just, cancel the show, destroy the program, you know? That's...
Yeah.
So we've got a real thing going after comedians at the moment, and lots of comedians coming out to apologize, sometimes preemptively. Oh, yeah, I did this thing all these years ago. I just want to apologize. And then, of course, they get attacked.
Yeah, but what's so weird is that some of these people who are woke, I mean, even... There's this one handle, Stand Up Batman, and he's really funny. He's anonymous, but he goes after particularly like the LA comedy scene.
Yeah.
And he was retweeting all these old Chelsea Peretti tweets that are wicked anti-Semitic. Like, I couldn't believe these even existed all the way up to like 2015. She was not young when she was tweeting this stuff.
Right.
And I couldn't believe they were even still there. I'm like, how has nobody picked up on this? And maybe they will.
Yeah, you'd think they'd do a delete.
But it's a weird, you know, my friend, Mitchell Sunderland, he was like, anyone who hasn't deleted their tweets like pre-Trump is an idiot.
You know, I haven't even thought to look back at what I tweeted. I don't know. I don't think I do generally offensive comedy though. So
I don't think it matters for people like us because we're already persona non grata. I think he means like people who are embraced by the left.
Right.
If they haven't thought, like Megan Amram was another one who recently, the writer from The Good Place and Parks and Rec, she was recently canceled, quote unquote, because she had some anti-Asian tweets, I guess some old ones, and she had some problematic tweets. And I was like, why are these even up? I mean,
but if it's like, were they jokes or were they just outright?
They were
a
jokes, but they're not. Nothing's. Even if it was a joke, and it's funny too because these are all people who are super woke, and I'm like, I would never make a joke like that because it seems like a racist joke to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just not my kind of humor. It's like
I can't imagine doing blackface. I don't think that would be something I would do.
No.
I wonder what occurs to people to do that. It's like, I mean, but they do forgive their own. I mean, Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
I think he spent more time in blackface than out of it, from what I can see.
That's a weird thing. That is a weird, he's been in blackface a lot.
Yeah, but he was re-elected, so clearly it's okay if you've got the right politics.
Yeah,
I guess.
Oh no, it's totally fine. And that's the thing is, I think it's fine, you know, somebody like Chelsea would be excused because her politics are right.
Right.
And I think that somebody, it brings up that kind of concept of being politically black. You know, I know plenty. I find the most interesting space in America right now to be black conservative women. I find the discussions that they're having to be fascinating because they occupy, like, you want to talk about the true minority, it's black conservative women in America.
Yeah.
And they are... they have the left going after them, the right going after them, because they'll push back against the right when they talk about, you know, the race, their experience as a Black woman. And what's fascinating to me is they just disagree with a lot of the way that the left is trying to handle it. It's just, they occupy such an interesting space because it's so, they get erased. You know, they will get erased as Black women because they are not the, it's not the right politics.
We even had in our government, Priti Patel, who's an Asian woman, who she was talking about her experiences of racism, growing up and experiencing racism. And she's a conservative. And then a group of Labour MPs on the other side attacked her and said, you're gaslighting us because you're using your experiences to further a kind of racist right-wing agenda. And actually, you should be listening to our experiences of racism. So then basically what they're saying is, as a person of colour, you should fall in line with our point of view.
Right.
And you shouldn't be thinking for yourself, and you shouldn't have your own view, which to me does strike me as a little bit racist.
It's racist. Did you see the videos of those crazy white people who went out, and I think they were in Seattle, of course, it seems like, I think it was Washington, because that place is out of hand, and they had put these makeup lashes on their backs, and they had signs that were saying, you know, like, what if this had happened, and then like there was a Black woman being like, get out of here, like, you are not helping us. And I was like, what? And I was saying this on Dumpster Fire, I'm like, a group of people got together, came up with this idea, and they put the makeup. I mean, this is like a whole thing that it wasn't like a, this was like a very thought out presentation.
Right. The optics aren't good on that one.
No.
I mean, I don't think any of that's, I think it's extreme gestures and the performative gesture, like the washing of the feet, you know, white people washing Black people's feet, this sort of cultish thing. I find all this collectivizing of people on the base of race really chilling, actually. I find it really disturbing.
That was so I went down this rabbit hole on that because I was like, what? That was a Pentecostal religious thing.
Right.
So now you're seeing the kind of, and that's even something else that's slightly terrifying, is the idea of wokeism, the religion, mixing with actual religion and creating like some super strain of insanity.
This is new to me, but apparently this is true, that even in, say, the Baptist Church in America, which is this super sort of evangelical church, is going woke and has got a lot of groups within it who are pushing them into wokeness. We got the Archbishop of Canterbury here saying we need to review some of the statues in churches. Well, that's not a million miles away from what Sean King was saying about tear down every white Jesus image or white Mary image, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is weird to me. I would have thought churches wouldn't be woke, but apparently.
No, I think it's in line with, it's probably much easier to just like overlap a religion on another religion.
Yeah, I guess.
It also, I think if, you know, they make good arguments in that we should be, I think the heart is in the right place. We should be treating people equally. We should be caring and loving our neighbor. I walked by a church the other day. This isn't that weird being that I'm in LA, but it was still strange to me to walk by a church and they had the pride flag flying.
Yeah.
And now I grew up in Catholicism. So the only thing that we were exposed to was priests diddling people. Like that, pedophilia was kind of the thing that was okay.
That was
if there was a flag for pedophilia, they probably would have been flying it.
But the idea of the pride flag on a church does seem incongruous to me. It seems weird. What with the whole stuff in Leviticus about man shall not lie with man, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, I don't think that's bad. I think it's actually, that is like, okay, cool. So you're okay. That's good. That seems like seems like tolerance to me. The idea that love is love. You know?
Sure, but can you really wokeify the Bible? I mean, is that really going to happen?
Because
there's not much trans or non-binary representation in the Bible. You know, they need to up that up.
Not
do
yet.
Something with that. Not yet.
Maybe it'll get a revision.
Maybe, but you know, well, if they try and do that to the Quran, that wouldn't go down particularly well. You know, how far can this woke thing go? You know, to all world religions.
Well, it's so much of it is capitalism too. It's interesting to see. You know, I was reading this article about 8 of the South Parks had to be taken out of HBO Max now that they're on there because
they're
controversial. And
but it's South Park.
particularly the ones that had the representations of Muhammad. And so, you know, they're, it's just weird where we like, I'm like, yeah. This is a, it's, you know, Yasmin Muhammad talks about this all the time, is like, we're, okay, you can still push back against an extremely toxic culture and an ideology that's dangerous and not be Islamophobic, you know, yeah, not be sure. Like, I hate all Muslims. You can still just be like, maybe we need to look at that ideology.
Sure. And but that's the leap they always take. I mean, it's the same with if you want a critical discussion about Black Lives Matter and the movement's goals, you're a racist. You know, right. it means you think Black lives don't matter. Well, who doesn't think Black lives matter?
No, I know. I see that all over town. You see, like, it's funny too. I was walking around and everybody has a Black Lives Matter poster, or many people have like big, huge posters that say Black Lives Matter with the fist. And I'm like, man, if I was black, I would walk up to every one of these houses and be like, give me your house. if you care about my life, are you willing to give me your house? Because if not, you're racist.
You should do that. Did you see that video after? You know, there was that should Starbucks.
Should I get in blackface?
Do it in black. Just do it in blackface. Yeah. I think you've already been canceled, Bridget. So
I'm dead.
You may as well.
I'm so glad we can still joke here.
Well, here we can.
I get in blackface and start walking around the neighborhood asking people to give me their house.
I think as a social experiment, that's a really interesting thing to do. No, let's do it. Let's do it. I'll film you. We'll see what happens, right? I mean, what could possibly go wrong? I remember after the, there was a Starbucks controversy after two black guys were sitting at a table and not ordering coffee and they were asked to leave. And
yeah,
it really
that was
blew
messed up.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And there was a really interesting video, this really funny guy, he's a black guy, and he'd gone into a Starbucks and filmed himself and said, I want my free coffee. I want my reparations. I want my reparations from Starbucks. And they just, of course, gave it to him. Which I understand.
I mean, why not though? Why not?
I also think
it's a sign that says I'm a rich white liberal that feels guilty, and I would be looting the fuck out of that house if shit goes sideways. I'm going to the Black Lives Matter houses first because I know they're the rich ones.
Yeah, but let's face it. I mean, that phrase is such good branding, Black Lives Matter, because of course it's impossible to disagree with.
Yeah.
But to me, saying something like that,
it's like Antifa.
Anti-fascist. Like, but I would always assume you were anti-fascist. I assume everyone's anti-fascist. I find it really suspicious. I've said this before, but I wrote an article saying, like, it's like wearing a badge saying, I am not a pedophile. Like, I find that really suspicious, you know?
That's what's so messed up. I was saying this about the brands when I was getting email after email. I'm like, I didn't think that you guys were racist until you started sending me emails and all of you telling me you're not racist. I'm like, oh, these brands might be pretty fucking racist.
All the ones that are saying they're racist. So Bad Robot, the filmmakers, put out a tweet saying we are committed to dismantling white supremacy in our workplace. I'm like, are you telling me you're a white supremacist filmmaker? Is that what you're telling me? Because that's quite an admission.
Yeah,
right?
Like, it's so weird. It's so, we live in the weirdest, it's bizarre. I didn't think you'd all have to make these statements. And
no, that's the problem.
You're seeing the cartoon, the voices, you know, what do you think about all that?
So is that like Mike Henry?
Mike Henry, Kristen Bell, Jenny Slate. I don't like to take away agency from anyone. So if that's your decision, fine. Like,
So he's the one who played Cleveland in Family Guy and has been doing it for a long time, I believe.
Like 20 years, I think.
Yeah. So did he always think that this was a problem, or did he not, or did no one think it was a problem before? I just don't see the point now at this point.
Yeah.
Of saying, oh, well, I won't do it anymore. I'll make millions off it over 20 years and now a black person can do it. Like, I don't know what the logic of that is.
Yeah, with the women too, it was like a big, long statement. I was like, just do it and don't make a big deal out of it. Don't make it, you're still making it all about you. Like, I've acknowledged my privilege and I've made this, and now I realize that I should not have been playing. And you see people online, big, giant accounts who are like, I don't know why I thought it was okay in the first place. And so
it seems like such a, I remember, with
Coach T when he came on, I was like, what does everyone want? You know, like,
What they want is a kind of moral purity that you've never done anything wrong. You'll completely go in line with our ideas about the world without a conversation. That's what they want, effectively. But can they ever have that?
Wasn't the Washington Post journalist yesterday? What's her name? She's the big one. She was really good friends with the guy who Saudi Arabia murdered. Khashoggi.
Oh, right.
Karen Atta, I think her name is.
I'm not familiar with this story. What's happened with her?
Yesterday, she had a bunch of tweets and she was saying, just be glad we're not. It's something basically a couple of times she was saying, like, just be glad that we're only canceling you and not asking for revenge. Wow. And then she ended up deleting them. And I was like, whoa, that's saying the quiet part out loud. Like,
a lot of them are doing that now.
Right? Yeah. Just see, I'm like, I feel like what you actually want is revenge.
Yes.
It's the I don't want revenge pin.
I think that's the deep hostility at the heart of a lot of this stuff. It's not disguised anymore. It's just out there now.
Yeah. You know? And I think you can see equality. We don't want equality. Oh, that's what you were saying. Just be glad we're only asking for equality and not revenge.
Right.
Something like that.
I mean, that's sinister. Yeah. It sounds like a threat. It sounds like a threat.
Like I don't want revenge.
That's exactly what you should do. Everyone needs to get off Twitter. They just need to get off Twitter. I mean, like today I saw the woman who played Matilda when she was a little girl in the film. And she was saying, you know, she was saying that basically being trans is the same as dyeing your hair. I mean, you can become something different. You know, that's what she was saying.
Right.
It was a bizarre thing to say. She said, there's no such thing as biological sex. Because you can change it, just as you can dye your hair and your hair is no longer red.
Okay. Yeah.
It was such a basic, stupid thing to say.
Yeah,
you know?
No. I can't. I think that's, you know, I think there are lines that I have to draw. And when people are like, one of the purity tests seems to be trans women are women. And I'm right. Like, no, I'm not fucking saying that. I'm not saying that.
But they would say to you, well, what is your definition of a woman then? Why do you get to decide what a woman is? You know?
Because it's been decided by biology long before.
That you're a heretic now.
I know.
Biology
it's pretty
is
basic.
An outdated theory that never worked out.
I just don't understand. It's so illogical. And I think that's why my brain resists it so much. It's like if biology isn't real, and trans women are women, why do you need to take hormones and why do we need to pay for your surgery?
Right.
And
right.
Why do you get to get a boob job paid for by the state and I don't?
Well, you're doing this all wrong. Exactly. You should be able to do that.
It's bullshit.
Blair White said that about, you know, if there's no such thing as biological sex, there's no such thing as trans.
Mm-hmm. It erases the whole idea of it.
And actually, she made this really good point that most trans people agree. They know that biological sex is a thing.
Well, I would fucking hope so. Or what do you need hormones for? And right. Like surgery? Because if it's not a real thing and it is just a construct, then you shouldn't need to actually change anything. You should just be able to change your mind.
Yeah, but you need to forget about all these things that doctors and biologists have been saying and just listen to George Takei or the people who say that biological sex isn't real. Just the sort of A-list Hollywood actors.
For some reason, this is the most chilling thing to me because it's so basic.
It's so basic.
It's so basically like fundamentally how it's so human and so... Not even just human, just on an animal level, I react to this. It's like, I'm like, you are trying to force me to believe something that is not fundamentally true on a cellular level, and I cannot get on board. I'm open to many things. I'm open to the idea that, yes, there have been trans people through all of time, and there have been cultures that were maybe less that's the other weird thing is that in order to, you know, with the gender curriculum, they have to reinforce all of these strict gender stereotypes in order to then defeat them. You know,
it makes no sense even on its own terms. That's what I find so shocking about this. You know, you can, if you're saying that a little boy who behaves in a feminine way or plays with dolls is therefore female. You're endorsing really old-fashioned conservative views of gender. I mean, you're basically...
Right. And as somebody who's Gen X, we just weren't raised with that. And this is what Abigail and I were talking about. You know, she's like, if you're a Gen X parent or you were raised Gen X, you weren't really raised with like, oh, girls play with dolls and boys play with trucks. Like, no. You were kind of not exposed to that. And so to then expose the next generation to those stereotypes. And if a girl is like, oh, I like trucks, and then, oh, well, you must be trans.
Yeah.
It's just... There's a lot of money in it.
There's money. There is a lot of clout in all of this stuff. There's a big industry surrounding it. But, you know, this to me gets to the heart of, this is the way the woke culture works. Since it's not just to do with trans issues. It's to do with sexuality, race, gender, all the rest of it. It's this thing of asking people to accept what is not true. It's a new kind of reality that they want to impose, one that is not based on empirical data or science.
Trump does this to his constituents too.
Absolutely.
But they aren't, and they happily, you know, drink it up as well. It's just,
yes, I mean, he'll just lie and say, no, I didn't say that, even though you can go on YouTube and watch the tape. Right? So it's just the same thing, isn't it?
I just feel like everybody's acting like we don't have eyes and ears. My inbox is filled with people who are legitimately feel like they're going crazy for all the reasons. At least with Trump and his constituents, they were already willing to accept his lies. Because in order to accept him, you have to... And then then there are people who just don't accept him. And then there are people like me who... don't accept him on principle and character, but then I have to fact check every single thing that is not accepted, because is it really what he said or is it just being misrepresented?
That's the other problem, is that often the things he said, or the things I'm told he said, he didn't even say.
No, or they're completely taken out of context.
So he lies about himself, and then the people who report on it lie about what he said.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, I read a report that said explicitly he said that you should go and inject yourself with bleach.
Yeah.
He didn't actually say that.
No.
I mean, he said something that was pretty fucking stupid, but he didn't say that.
Yeah.
But I'd rather just know what he said honestly so I can make my own judgment. I don't need it to be exaggerated because it's stupid enough to begin with.
This is an ongoing theme on Dumpster Fire. I'm like, stop making me defend this guy. He says something stupid and then you guys take it out of context and somehow make it worse, but now you're lying and now I have to actually... defend him, and then someone will say, oh, you're a Trump supporter. I'm like, no, I'm just trying to be fucking accurate for whatever that's worth, which is clearly nothing in 2020. Nothing.
Clearly not. You've got to be one side or the other. No moderation.
No.
No discussion. So, Bridget, I'm gonna wrap up. This has been great to chat again. I want to ask you now, though, what do we do? How do we get out of this? Can we get out of this? Is it too
late? I'm going down with the ship, I've decided, because... all I can do is talk until I can't talk anymore. I was going to just disappear and become a food blogger. I really did think it. And I still might. I'm not leaving that. Like, just go get a place in the woods, a lot of guns and ammo, and prepare for what I know is coming.
I feel like that. I feel like that just retreating. It'd be so much easier, wouldn't it?
It would be so much easier. Although, you know, Heather Hying made a really good point. Because we didn't want this... unfortunately, because we were already canceled and we are the last people in a position to still speak up, and it is kind of our own moral obligation to do so because we are in a position to do so. So as more and more people are like, what the fuck is going on? It's our, she's like, she didn't want to be in the position she's in. She and Brett didn't want to be, you know, alienated. Because if somebody said, well, you have to choose a side, I'm like, doesn't even matter what side I choose, because the left has already chosen it for me.
That's something, all the people who I'm told are grifters or they love saying these things or being contrarian, none of us wanted this.
No.
This isn't how you make a life, by losing all your friends.
And it's not like I'm making a lot of money either. I'm making enough of a living because people feel bad for me, essentially, I think. And they want, you know, Michael and I were saying, Michael made a really good point. He said, how can people help if they can't speak? Well, help support people like you or me or people who can speak on your behalf so that we can continue to do so as long as that might be possible, which who knows how long that is.
Yeah, because I tell you, like, standing up against a social justice ideology, it's no gravy train.
It isn't the way
to make money.
No, and really especially isn't. If you're not willing to go all in on the other side. So if I was going to be like, yeah, fuck these liberal snowflakes and I'm full MAGA and start wearing like a Make America Great Again hat, I would probably make a lot more money and be accepted as an apostate who's, you know, now one of them. And like, see this. And there was a moment where I was like, I realized it would be very easy to be A, weaponized, and B, go make a shitload of money on that gravy train. Yeah. And there was a moment on the left when I was like, I either need to shut up and get in line, or I have to keep speaking what I feel is funny and or true, and at the risk of not ever working in Hollywood again. But that was a decision I made. A conscious decision.
You may as well be wearing the MAGA hat and going on about owning the libtards because that's what people think you are secretly, right? That's
Well, and like I said, even if I don't want to pick a side, it's the left isn't having me. You know, there's no, right. Even if I said I'm a liberal, I'm with them. If the war came down and I was like, no, I'm on this side, they'd be like, no, you're not. You're the first one on the firing line. You know?
Right.
Like, you are not. I think all you can do in this moment, if you're an individual who wants to, who can't really speak out, which there's so many people because they have lives, you know, to keep people, mouths to feed and jobs to keep, is just get yourself as spiritually, mentally, and physically fit as you can. That's what I'm doing. I'm just like doing push-ups. I'm like fucking watching Linda Hamilton and Terminator.
Yeah.
That is me. I'm basically like doing sit-ups and learning how to do pull-ups. Like, I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to get meditating every day, eating really well. Like, I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to do that.
That's a good idea. You know, Linda Hamilton knew there was a war coming and she got hench, didn't she?
Learn how to shoot. Yeah, I don't know. Learn how to protect your family. Make sure you have enough water.
Yeah. Well, let's just hope people start speaking out more and, you know, but I understand exactly what you say. I understand why they don't. Bridget, this has been so fun.
I adore you. We need to do this more often.
We do. And so can you tell us where we can find you, where the listeners can locate your work?
Yes. You can find me anywhere online at Bridget Phetasy. That's P-B-R-I-D-G-E-T. Phetasy. And you can subscribe to my podcast, which Andrew has been on twice now. Walk-ins, welcome. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel where you'll get a weekly bi-weekly dumpster fire. And what else? Oh, Phetasy.com, my community, where it's the online support group. And that's about it. Yeah, I'm kind of...
And the dreaded Twitter.
And Twitter. Yeah, Twitter is... Twitter is where we live.
Well, I would heartily recommend that people follow you and check out your YouTube channel as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Good luck.
Thank you for listening to Culture Wars with Andrew Doyle. If you enjoyed the show, please make sure that you subscribe so that you never miss an episode. If you didn't enjoy the show, then you're obviously a cretin. Come back next month. We're going to have another amazing special guest. It could be anyone. It could be Christopher Biggins. It could be Floella Benjamin. You know, it could be Cher. Fuck off. I could get Cher, right? She owes me a favour. So join me next month. See you then.